How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, Tuesday, June 29th, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have Raw to talk about tonight, a bunch of news to get into, a little more on UFC 116, and we'll do your email questions as well. And Dave, what's going on tonight?
Well, it seems like a lot of things are going on, kind of follow-up on the Strikeforce stuff. I mean, nothing really new, just still like a lot of talk, a lot of people, you know, a lot of mass suicides, I heard, things like that.
Mass suicides?
Yeah, because Fedor lost.
Yeah, well, on the internet, yes. People have allegedly lost their houses, whole nine yards. It's quite the deal. Believe me, if anybody wants comedy, go on the MMA forums right now. Not necessarily on our site, but they're all over the internet, and you'll have a great time. Just want to throw that out there.
I mean, you know, this is the deal. It's like, anyone can lose. There's no such thing as unbeatable fighter. And, you know, that's the deal. I mean, the thing is like, I think the thing that, like, cracks me up now is people who are taking, like, this result as proof of, like, anything. You know, other than the fact that he got armbarred in this match. You know, like, that he was never good, or, you know, it shows he's washed up, or, you know, any of those things. All it was he got caught with an armbar. You know, I mean, it's nothing more. It happens to, you know, it happens to, you know, I mean, who's gone undefeated for a whole career? I mean, we had Fedor sort of, but even though he actually lost once to Kosaka, and we had Lyoto Machida, and he lost too, probably twice actually in a row, even though he's only been credited for one loss. And you know, so now out of the top guys, I can't think of anyone of any, like, you know, who's like at a top level guy who hasn't been beaten. I mean, Johnny Jones has the DQ loss, but he's still not. I mean, he's not a top level guy with years and years in the, you know, in the business fighting, you know, the top level guys. I mean, when these guys fight, it happens. You know, he was, you know, realistically, he was very lucky in the sense that when Fujita staggered him, Fujita didn't follow up. If he did, Fujita would have beat him years ago. He was probably very lucky that Randleman had no clue how to defend submissions, you know, after he was manhandling him, and, you know, then, you know, and still lost anyway. You know, so, I mean, it's you know, things happen. And, you know, I mean, I think the thing is that people are going like, okay, you know, where should he be rated? You know, it's like, you know, ratings in MMA are stupid because they don't fight each other. You try to get, you know, this thing of where, well, let's see now, since Verdum lost to Dos Santos, so Fedor has to be below Dos Santos, but that may be, and maybe, you know, maybe today Dos Santos would beat Fedor. Until they fight, you don't know, but the point is that that could also be, Fedor also could be much better than Dos Santos, and having to rate that way could also be just, like, completely stupid. And, you know, it makes this, Fedor's loss, I mean, people are going like, well, you know, it's like, now it puts more emphasis on Lesnar and Carwin. Lesnar and Carwin isn't going to sell one more buy because Fedor lost. It's not going to sell one less buy if he had won, you know? I mean, it's to the people who buy pay-per-views, that's not even a material point. So anyway, I don't know what that's all about, but.
I just wonder if some of these people have ever competed in anything in their lives. I mean,
the thing is, like, if you compete in wrestling, I mean, like, you know, granted, I mean, there are people like Kael Sanderson who really, you know, don't lose, you know, for years, you know, but that's like one in a million guys.
And
you know?
If he kept going, at some point he would lose.
Well, and he did. Well, once he got out of the, I mean, he didn't lose in 4 years of college, but when he started competing at the international level, he lost at the U.S. team trials. He lost at international levels. I mean, he did end up winning a gold, but it's not like he went, you know, unbeaten. I mean, Dan Gable went, you know, years and years and years, and he only really lost the one match, which was in the NCAA finals, I think, in his senior year, and then he went and won a gold, and he really did beat everyone. But then, you know what? When Dan Gable was a couple of years older, you know, he overtrained and burned himself out physically, and when he came back and he was a couple of years older, a lot of guys beat him, you know.
To me, it's like, I didn't think that Fabricio Werdum was going to beat Fedor. And I'm not going to say I would be lying out of my ass if I said right now that I was predicting Verdum, because I wasn't. But
you know who did?
Who's that?
Coker.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
But no, he looks really smart. Okay. But in my mind, I know Scott Coker pretty well. I think he was predicting Verdum because he thought that everybody thought it was a mismatch, so he was going to say that because it was the right way to promote it. But now, today, he looks like a genius.
Regardless.
He did, in fact, predict Verdum.
Okay, regardless, I didn't predict Verdum, but I'm still trying to figure out, for some of these people, what is so astounding about Fabricio Verdum triangling Fedor Emelianenko. I mean, this is not like Kimbo Slice caught Fedor in a triangle. You know what I mean?
Well, Fedor,
this is not
Fedor had never been caught in a submission nor even threatened with a submission. So, I mean, it was...
All fine and good, but this is not like outlandish that a guy who's...
Although I didn't expect it.
I know, but it's not outlandish that a guy who is as talented on the ground as Fabricio Verdum could triangle Fedor Emelianenko. That's the part about this that really shocks me, that people are this astounded that a guy can get caught in a tight triangle and be forced to tap. I mean, this is... I don't know. It's just kind of astounding to me. If I don't know. If, like I said, if Kimbo would have triangled him, then yes, maybe you'd be thinking, wow, you know, the sky is falling. But Verdum triangled the guy.
Well,
great!
You know, I mean, Matt Serra beat St. Pierre.
Sure.
And you know what? Matt Serra beat St. Pierre, okay? Knocked him out. Beat the hell out of him, right? And guess what? What has St. Pierre done since then? Was St. Pierre washed up because he got knocked out by Matt Serra?
No.
Was Matt Serra really the number one welterweight in the world? I mean, he was the world champion because he beat the champion. You know, he was a legitimate world champion. But the point is, I mean, was George St. Pierre, as we know with the benefit of hindsight, really overrated going into the Serra fight because he lost to Serra? You know, with the benefit of hindsight, we know that, in fact, George was not overrated. He simply had a bad day, got caught, and lost, and then came back and destroyed everyone ever since then.
Sure.
And again... You know, Fedor, is he washed up? You know, who knows? Maybe he is. But this fight doesn't prove anything. It just proves that anyone can win, and somebody had a bad day. And, I mean, Lesnar lost a couple of times in college wrestling, too. You know, I mean, the best of the best. You know, Lance Armstrong loses races. You know what I mean? Tiger Woods doesn't win every tournament. I mean, it doesn't make Fedor any less of an all-time great, because, you know, he's human, and, you know, who wins every time? Especially, think about this, it was 10 years.
10 years.
You know, who has 10-year, I mean, granted, it's only a couple fights a year, but who has 10-year win streaks in sports?
Yeah.
I mean, who has 10 years on top in sports? There are guys who do, but they're only the most elite athletes when you're talking about number one in your sport for 10 years. I mean, you know, yeah, Michael Jordan was number one for 10 years, sure, but, you know, I mean, that's the level of athlete we're talking about. And again, maybe the last 3-4 years he wasn't even that good. We don't know, because he wasn't tested with top competition. I mean, it's you know, there were always question marks to me on Fedor ever since, you know, the last time, again, the last time to me he fought a real top contender was 05 with Krokop. That's a different era, okay? And he was number one in the world then. And Krokop was still at his peak then, because Krokop came back and won the Grand Prix, which at that point, that was a lot of the top fighters in the world at that point. So, and he blitzed through everybody. So, I mean, he was still, you know, he was still clearly a top guy at that point. When he fought, you know, Sylvia, I mean, hey, the guy looked great against Tim Sylvia in that fight. I mean, how good's Tim Sylvia, you know, I don't know. You know, I mean, he's not top. He wasn't top of the food chain. Arlovski, you know, I always thought Arlovski had been overrated for quite a while. And, you know, Arlovski was outpointing him for 3 minutes. Then he knocked the hell out of Arlovski. And then Brett Rogers gave him a good go, but he did knock the hell out of Brett Rogers when all was said and done. So maybe he was slipping. Maybe, you know, I think it's funny, though, like, I think we got a poll up on the site, and I haven't looked at it in a couple hours, but with Fedor and Verdum, if there's a rematch, I mean, it seems pretty darn solid that almost every, you know, the vast, vast majority think Fedor's beaten him in the rematch.
Well, let's take a look at that poll right here.
Okay, you can go do that.
If Fedor and Verdum had a rematch, who would you pick to win? Results, 84.7% for Fedor. Poor Verdum, 15.3%.
Yeah, it's pretty one-sided.
Yeah, it's pretty one-sided.
Yeah. So.
Let's speak of this no more at this point.
Okay.
Let's move on to the issues with both Wade Barrett and Drew McIntyre. And Drew McIntyre, of course, on SmackDown. Storyline was he's been deported. Wade Barrett, the storyline is he's in Stamford talking to the folks at WWE headquarters about why he killed Vince McMahon. Apparently, both guys' working visas are up. Wade Barrett back in the UK. Drew McIntyre, who knows where he is? Could be on a boat right now. But I'm just astounded that a multi-million dollar company... I mean, listen, for people to think I'm biased against TNA, I ranted and raved about the stupidity of the Angelina Love situation, and I'm going to do the same thing right here.
Well, the Angelina
How
Love
does this happen?
The Angelina Love situation was different. They never got her a visa in the first place.
Okay, well, that was a different level of stupid. But still, you're a
And it wasn't the only one. They didn't get, like, the Mexicans' visas and things like that. I mean, they were tempting. WWE
They were trying
very,
to fly under the radar.
He's very. They are very professional at this. However...
So it's really more astounding in the case of WWE.
I mean, I guess so. But I mean, this isn't the first time because when Steve Lillington was in OVW, and granted he was not a high priority guy, he was just in developmental. I remember he had to go back for like a long. You know, he got his visa expired, and he got fired because his visa expired because, and he had to go back to England for a long time. He had to get it all worked out, and then he ended up coming back and. Had a brief run in WWE and then got fired again, having nothing to do with his visa, and now he's back trying to figure out a way back into this country because he wants to be an actor, but that's a different issue. But, yeah, I mean, the thing, it's astounding. It's astounding. I don't know what to say about it because it's...
I have more to say. The Drew McIntyre thing...
You know, it may be, you know, I'm not sure this falls under... It might be, legal, and Ed Coffin was fired by Vince, and something fell through the cracks. I don't really know. I shouldn't really have speculated on that, but Ed Coffin is involved with a lot of the contracts and things like that, or was before he was fired, I should say. You say that this is the same company where Rock's contract expired, so it's shit. Shit, sometimes, I mean, we used to joke about it with WCW, and it certainly happened more with WCW where, guys, they would forget to fire guys, so their contracts would roll over for another year that they were never using and things like that. But I guess it happens here from time to time, too.
The Drew McIntyre thing, I mean, he's not been lighting my world on fire of late, but Wade Barrett...
And you know what? They did the storyline. It was clearly they knew that was coming.
Yes.
Wade Barrett...
Wade Barrett
They certainly did nothing to get ready for that.
He is the centerpiece of NXT right now, and if they lose that guy for several months, somebody's head's got to roll for this one.
That's a bad one, especially because of the Danielson thing. Now you've got, who was the top guy on the show tonight?
Justin Gabriel.
It wasn't really. I mean, he's got no personality. I sensed it was like Skip Sheffield, I believe, which was just shocking, and Heath Slater were kind of like, to me, sort of the focal points. I mean, I know they want Otunga, but the guy doesn't have it.
No.
And, Darren Young doesn't have it. Tarver's got a good look, but, when push comes to shove and he's in matches and everything, he doesn't have it either. So they did a hell of an angle tonight, though. I mean, the fact is that not having Barrett was fine. They explained it, that he was in Stamford, so they gave you a very logical explanation. But if they go on TV next week, and it is set up, where because of that angle, they could go in there, and if he's going to be gone for a while, they could, he's the ringleader and he's fired. They could do that, or he's suspended for what he did to Vince. I mean, it is all set up for storyline if he isn't back. But God knows that this angle, which has helped the ratings and is renewed some interest, and it's the best angle they've done in a long time. Damn, that angle is going to be in you know, it's not dead, but it's not going to have a lot of legs without Wade Barrett's, you know, without Wade Barrett doing promos, because it's just, it goes downhill real bad from there.
Well, if all else fails, somebody can join NXT.
Yeah, that's true. They could have they could come back and have Vince run it. You know, Vince be the mouthpiece.
I was thinking more along the lines of Jericho, but
they could do that too.
They did. The one thing I liked, I really liked Raw this evening, and one of the main reasons I liked it was because while it didn't all make sense, they really worked hard to try to make it make sense, and so I do give them credit for that. The main storyline of the show was that the new Mystery Raw GM, in the opening segment, I guess we'll start from the beginning, Sheamus came out and was doing this promo about how much he hated John Cena. And Cena came out, and Sheamus told him, "You're no longer the number one contender. You've got to go to the back of the line." And Cena said, "I'm not here for a title shot. I am here to ask you to help me team up to take out these Nexus fools." That's their new name, Nexus. And they were chit-chatting about this when the guest GM, through Michael Cole, announced that if Nexus laid a finger on any of the WWE superstars, they would be terminated. However, if any WWE superstar initiated contact with any of the Nexus guys, they would be suspended. So basically, the storyline was that neither side could lay a hand on each other until, I guess, this Wade Barrett situation was handled, since he was supposedly in Stanford discussing everything that went down. And that played into the angle later on in the show, which we'll get to, which was the Nexus guys coming out and destroying a bunch of legends. And the way they explained it, which was kind of a stretch, but at least
legends are not superstars, they are legends.
That's right. The legends are not superstars, they're merely legends. And so that's why the NXT guys could beat them up. But the WWE guys could not make the save, because if they did, they would be laying a hand on the Nexus guys, and thus they would all be suspended. So,
however, there is a flaw here, and that is that Jerry Lawler is listed on their superstars page.
Oh, well, but I'm sure, maybe not for long, actually. He should just be an announcer. Yeah. So
but
they tried.
He's got a dual capacity.
That's right. Anyway, to go back to the opening segment, we'll talk about the beating here in a bit, but they ended up with the guy, the mystery GM, announcing that the guys in Money in the Bank would be announced later. It was going to be Sheamus versus Cena for the title at Money in the Bank in a steel cage match to make sure nobody interferes. Which,
you know what's too bad about that?
I presume everyone's going to interfere.
Well, I mean, that's what's been happening at all the house shows over the weekend. They had cage matches and they had interference every night. But I just thought it was so funny when they said that, because, you know, there was a time when that was like the big deal with the cage match. But, I mean, people have interfered in cage matches for like 15 straight years. So now all of a sudden this cage keeps people from interfering?
Yeah. It's not going to
work. I mean, it's almost like we reverted back to the 70s.
Yeah. So that was the opening segment, and I think that was the gist of all the news in that particular segment. Cena did a lot of goofy comedy, which I didn't think helped the segment, but
the people in the building, at least, were not fond of the mystery GM thing.
No, every time Michael Cole stood up, they booed vociferously.
Yeah, they were not happy with it, and it, you know what? It felt really goofy, you know, the way that all was handled. It just, you know. It doesn't flow. It doesn't flow well at all. Thankfully, after the first segment, the mystery GM only came into play like, you know, once or twice. So it was, you know, it didn't hurt the flow of the show. I tell you, the one thing on the show that I thought was very good is that when the show was over, there was really only one thing that happened on this show, and that was the angle where, you know, to get those guys over beating up the legends. And they didn't cram. I mean, they did little things like, you know, Santino and Kozlov and things here and there. But really, there was nothing else that you needed to remember on the show other than the one thing. And I thought that was like so effective. And you know, like they told you who was in the the pay-per-view match. I mean, they told you who was, you know, they focused on the eight guys in the Money in the Bank, so you kind of should know who they are because you saw them all in the eight-man tag. I mean, it was very simple stuff.
Very good. Hearts came out for the match with the Usos, but the Usos beat them up, destroyed them. Tamina hit Natalya with the big Superfly splash, and that was the extent of the segment there.
So I guess they're going to be a pay-per-view match.
Yep. R-Truth did an interview and said, why fire these fools? Just allow them to come in here and we'll beat them all up. Let him in the WWE zoo, he said, and I'll be the zookeeper. That was the exact line. He delivers a better bad line, better than most. So, we'll say that. Kozlov and Santino, with stip being that if Santino beat him, Kozlov had agreed they would become tag team partners. They actually did a grappling match of sorts early. Santino, or Kozlov tried a rolling guillotine and tried an arm bar, and Santino powered out.
They tried a triangle spot, too.
Yep. Santino did a judo throw and tried a kick, but Kozlov caught it and slammed him for the pin. These guys need to do fake MMA like every week because it's so much better than their fake wrestling. I will say that. And then afterwards, Regal came out and he was beating up Santino, but Kozlov ran down to make the save and then carried Santino to the back, which the fans love for some reason. So
yeah, so I guess they're going to be a tag team. I
guess they're the goofy team now, yeah.
Yeah.
Then we had a really...
Collie and Hornswoggle.
Well, we'll talk about Collie here. Actually, right now, we had a very weird segment where Josh interviewed Kali about what they should do about Nexus. And he said something in great Kali's, and Ron Jin looked at him and then heaved a big sigh. And he said, Kali's manager thinks that Kali is a big, stupid giant. He's sick of protecting him. And if the Nexus guys show up right now, Kali will run like a big, giant something or other in, I guess, Punjabi. And he stormed off, and Kali looked at him, mumbled something, and then just shrugged. And that was the end of the segment. So I have absolutely no idea what this was.
Yeah, I guess they're doing something on, like, you know, fake translators or something. I don't know. Someone had an idea.
I guess so.
I don't know where that one's. I don't know where that one's going though.
And nor do I care, actually. Rob Zombie, this week's guest host, came out, talked about Money in the Bank. Listed the eight guys in the match at the pay-per-view. We've got Randy Orton, Miz, R-Truth, Jericho, Evan Bourne, Ted DiBiase, John Morrison, and Edge. And then Edge appeared on the big screen and cut a promo on Rob saying, the last time I talked to you, I was telling you that I was no longer going to use your song for my entrance. And then Rob said, I took it away from you because I couldn't bear to hear you butcher it. And then he threw down his mic and left. That was last we saw of Rob Zombie. So
thank God.
It's quite the segment here. Yeah. They mentioned it was a one-year anniversary of guest hosts, and I don't know. We won't have another year of it. I can almost guarantee that. So we had Edge showing clips of Money in the Bank, how he won it the first time, how he cashed in on Cena. He was significantly larger back then and said he was going to do that same thing again this year. And anyway, the GM ended up appearing to sign Edge, Miz, DiBiase, and Jericho against Bourne, Morrison, Truth, and Orton for the main event, which I think I've mentioned this before. I don't think it's possible to have like a 6 or 8 man tag in the main event of Raw and have it not be really good, and this one was. Then we got Sheamus and Henry, which was really no good. Sheamus.
But they kept it short.
Yeah, they did. Henry had a splash. Sheamus got his feet on the ropes. Henry pressed him back into the ring, and then Sheamus did the jumping kick for the pin, and not much to say about that. NXT guys threatened a cameraman. Actually, they beat up a production guy and threatened Josh, showing him that, you know, we can beat up anyone as long as they're not superstars. Then we add the big angle. Lawler was in the ring talking about the Steamboat DVD, which comes out tomorrow. And they had a video package about it, which was pretty cool. Called out Steamboat. And when he got to the ring, Lawler said, we got some other guys that wanted to come out from the back and honor you as well. And they were Arn Anderson, Dean Malenko, Mike Rotundo, and Michael Hayes. And they all did promos on him. Except
God,
for
the same guys that are in the back every single week.
Yep. Hayes stole the camera time.
I would have hoped that they could have at least like brought in like somebody.
No.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter.
How did you like Arn's promo where he had to talk about if you made a top five, it would have Triple H, Shawn Michaels,
Undertaker, and,
Undertaker, and then he paused. Everyone's going, woo, and he couldn't say the name. And then he had to talk about how Ricky was the best guy he'd ever been in the ring with. And I was like, wow, this poor guy.
You know what's amazing about Arn? Is now that he's old, he looks just like Ole.
Huh.
I mean, like, exactly.
Well, Frank Shamrock looks just like Ken Shamrock.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Doesn't at all.
Oh, we need to put this poll up on the front page tomorrow.
It doesn't look exactly like him at all. Not like Ole and Arn.
Well, I won't say exactly. For years, I would not believe.
I mean, no. There is a similarity in the fact that they both had like similar physiques and things like that. I mean, you know, people did think they were real brothers and all that, but
yes.
Not like Ole and Arn. They look like almost identical. Ken and Frank could pass for brothers. I will agree with that.
Okay, long as we got that. So anyway, as Ricky is doing his promo, out came the NXT guys, and the way they did this, they didn't just come out and beat everybody up. First, they silenced the announcers, which always makes it better. Then they all surrounded the ring, and they tried to get in while the legends tried to keep them out. And they finally got their hands on Arn, and they beat the crap out of him. And then wash, rinse, repeat. This whole thing went like, I don't know, 12 minutes or so, as they, one by one, eliminated legends. And finally, they all got in there, and they surrounded Steamboat. And he fired up and threw a couple of chops, and then they beat the crap out of him, and they all hit their move. Otunga did the slam, and Sheffield did the clothesline and killed the poor guy. And then they sent up poor Justin Gabriel again to hit the big 450 on the old guy. And
he's standing up there going, oh, no, not again.
You know what's funny, though, is I cannot imagine they're doing this on purpose, but he always, and he is scared shitless, but he always looks like it. And when he went up there today and he's looking down on Steamboat and the other guys are yelling, do it, and all this and that, I thought, you know, the day's going to come when he goes up there and they tell him to do it, and instead he does like a flying high cross onto the NXT guys and turns babyface. And I think if they do it right, he'll be a huge babyface until they screw it up.
Until he has to do his first babyface interview.
Well, sure. He's going to need a babyface sidekick that can talk.
I mean,
for
he's going to need to be a tag team. You know, that's all there is to it.
Sure. But, well, you never know. It might work out. He might grow into the role. But anyway, he hit the move and laid him out, and they did the big stretcher job with Steamboat. And this got a lot of heat.
It was so well done.
Oh, yeah. This was excellent.
Yeah. I thought, going back to Arn, it was just like, When he's talking about the five greatest of all time, and you know, the three names he mentioned were Shawn, you know, and you know, you can make the case for Shawn, okay? Undertaker, you know, not five greatest.
Not
but it
of
is
all
WWE.
Time.
Oh, no, not of all time. I mean, you know, but Triple H, it's like, I mean, I know why. I mean, I know it's like you couldn't do it without saying him because of, you know, where they were. God, did I want to gag when I heard that. I mean, it was just, there was something about it. It was just like, you know, it was just, I think because Arn had been in the ring with so many great wrestlers that are so much better than Triple H. You know, not that Triple H is a very good wrestler, but I mean, I've got to think, you know, if I put it down on a piece of paper that I've seen, you know, I don't know, 200, but certainly 100 guys is good, if not better. You know, certainly 100 guys better, you know. And Arn's been in the ring with, you know, certainly dozens of guys better than Triple H. And I don't know, there was something about having to say that was just sort of like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I guess it's WWE, you know, you have to say it.
But, yeah, this should not surprise anyone.
It's all scripted for him anyway.
Yeah. So he got stretchered out, and that was the end of that. Cole explained the deal about the Nexus being not attacking superstars, but rather legends, and how
I thought that was very well done, him explaining when they came back from the break, because I think a lot of people were like very confused on why those guys weren't fired.
It was fascinating that it was Cole doing. I still think Cole's going to be the mastermind behind this. Maybe they won't for whatever reason, but him with the wacky computer and him being the one that's making all these announcements, I don't know.
Maybe it'll come out and it's JR at the end. I mean, because the guy doesn't have to be there. You know, the whole thing with JR was, you know, I mean, because I figured that when they do the reveal, it's the guy's only going to be there, whoever it is, at the end, is only going to be there for 1 week anyway. So it could be anyone just for 1 week. I mean,
why would they reveal him but only have him there for 1 week?
Well, because once he's revealed, it's like there's no point.
Well, then he just assumes the role of public GM.
Well, then it won't be JR. They didn't want him on TV. They didn't want him on TV for, like, you know, like 45 seconds of on-camera anymore. They certainly aren't going to want him cutting promos every week for 5 minutes as GM.
Yeah.
So, and if it's, the other thing is if it's somebody big, like, you know, like, again, like, you know, The Rock or something like that, it's like they're only getting one show out of that guy. Or Sean, or even if it's Sean. You know, it's like Sean ain't gonna, I don't think Sean's going to come back every week. Maybe they can talk him into it, but I think that when they come to reveal the guy, they're going to reveal some shocking guy, but the guy's going to, you know, that'll be it for that guy, because that guy, the guy who they reveal, isn't going to want to be there every Monday to follow up.
Sure. Maurice and Alicia against Gail and Eve, with Josh replacing Lawler. We got another Daniel Bryan chant during this match, which was apropos. And the finish was Alicia perhaps killing Gail. She hit her axe kick, and somehow her leg wrapped all the way around Gail's head, basically nutcracking her skull. That had to suck. And that was a match. Not much to say about it.
I was kind of disappointed because I thought that they, like, moved Maurice out of this position, and now she was right back in.
Yep.
And I don't know. I mean, she should be, you know. I mean, she came up with DiBiase later, but it was almost like it was, you know, completely insignificant. You know,
it was completely insignificant.
She was not at ringside managing him during the match. They just brought her out, and to me, that should be her role, is out there managing Ted DiBiase.
That led to the main event: Edge, Miz, Jericho, and DiBiase against Orton, Evan, R-Truth, and Morrison. They had a great 8-man tag. They got heat on, I think it was Bourne for a while. Then he got a hot tag, and they worked over Morrison for a while, and then
Was Morrison first? Morrison first, then Bourne came in with a hot tag, and then...
That's right. Missed the shooting star, Jericho with the code breaker. They both fought for the tag. Ended up with DiBiase and Orton getting a hot tag, and Orton immediately RKO'd him for the pin. That finish about sucked, but...
Well, you know, you notice in the match that they had Orton and R-Truth barely in because they're both hurt.
Yeah.
Orton's got a neck injury, and R-Truth's got a groin injury. So... you know, they both need to, I mean, I don't know the seriousness of it, but they, you know, they didn't work the night before in, wherever they were, Willing, West Virginia, I think. And I was told, like, you know, if they were going to wrestle on this show at all, and there was question if they were, that, you know, they made the, you know, they, by the time they put it, decide with the 8-man tag that, you know, they can, you know, in that 8-man tag, neither of them had to do much. I mean, Bourne and Morrison worked, you know, almost the entire match.
And that led to everybody doing their wacky spots with the ladder, and Miz went up, Orton tipped it over, necked Miz, and then Orton climbed up and grabbed the briefcase as the show ended. So it was a very good Raw. Good job setting up the pay-per-view, and I guess we'll see what they do for SmackDown tomorrow night. And that brings us to the Impact tapings. Yet another week of Impact tapings coming from the Impact Zone in Orlando. And what do we have here on this particular program? We had Abyss doing the deal, setting up the Hogan match, which is coming up in October. They're already attacking each other, by the way. So I don't know how they're going to hold this off until the fall.
No, they have to.
They don't have to, but that's their plan still?
Hogan can't work at this point. He just had back surgery.
That's true. I don't know if he can work in the fall either, though, is the problem.
He's going to be hurting bad just trying a match, especially with Abyss. It's not like he's working with Flair.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even work with Flair. I mean, after the first match with Flair, he was like, his hip was out, his back was out. He couldn't even do anything.
It's going to be sad times. It's going to be a big brawl and some violence. And I guess you can do some more smoke and mirrors with Abyss than with Flair, because Flair's going to want to try and work.
I guess. But Abyss is going to try, you know, want to take bumps and thumbtacks and stuff.
Well, that's fine. Hogan just punches him, and he bumps into thumbtacks, and everybody cheers.
Yeah.
We had Sabin and Shelley beating Jesse, Neal, and Shannon Moore. Of course, they're the number one contenders coming up at the pay-per-view here, with Bubba trying to attack Neal. D-Von stops him. And we had Samoa Joe beating AJ Styles. The Pope is back to face Kurt Angle at the pay-per-view. Because I guess that's why they put Pope into the top 10 inexplicably on the last
To set up the paper reshuffle. Match. And then the next match, I think they're going to put the Kurt against Samoa Joe. Because on this pay-per-view, it was either going to be the Pope or Joe, depending on whether the Pope was going to be ready for the match. You know, so I think Joe would then be next, and then it would be, I don't know, maybe AJ or something. You know, because he's got to beat everyone all the way up to the top, which I guess means that he's going to have to beat Jeff Hardy too.
Yeah.
And Abyss.
At some point, he's got to win the title, I presume, at the end.
I would think so.
That would be a lame storyline to beat all 10 contenders and then lose.
He goes all the way to the top and then he loses.
Sure.
Yeah, 10-month storyline.
I should not give them ideas.
Yeah. Hey, but you know what? By the time they get there, they may have two booking changes and it doesn't matter anyway.
They may have forgotten that he's beaten all these men, yes.
Yeah.
Kendrick beat Desmond and then Chelsea walked out on Desmond. That storyline at least continues. We had Jay Lethal very upset because they'd beaten up his brother. And Matt Morgan came out, which led to Lethal versus Morgan, with Hernandez interfering. So Lethal got the pin. You'd think Lethal would be getting some clean wins leading up to this match with Flair, but apparently not. Madison Rain.
Clean wins? This is TNA.
That's right, I know. Madison Rain beat Taylor Wilde with the ECW guys in the crowd, who are going to need a new name. We've got to think of like a new name for these guys. Because it can't be ECW.
No.
EXT?
Could be.
Sarita attacked Taylor Wilde, so that tag team is finished. Or it's another tag team that hates each other, which we've seen about a million times in TNA. Sting suspended for 30 days by Dixie Carter. She went into the rafters to do this. And then he tried to attack her, and I guess security made the save for her. And then finally, Jeff Hardy versus Abyss with RVD as the referee. And Hardy ended up laying out Abyss, hitting the senton after Abyss tried to use a chair and RVD took it away. And then they did, I guess, a deal where Anderson tried a chair shot. Abyss moved. He accidentally hit Hardy. So maybe they're breaking those two up. I don't know already. And then Abyss hit the shock treatment on Anderson as the show ended. So nice parody book in there in the main event.
Yeah, so that's the Thursday show.
That's Thursday, everybody, and another taping tomorrow night, I guess, is the plan, which would be the go-home show for whatever the next pay-per-view is.
Victory Road.
Yeah. All right, let's do some of the questions here before we wrap it up today. Out of all the workers out there, who do you think has made the most out of the least booking help?
The most out of the least booking help?
Ric Flair in the last 15 years.
Yeah, he's never had booking help. That's a good answer. Jericho, to a degree, he hasn't really had a lot of booking help, and he's had a lot of late,
but not several years.
I don't think he ever had. To me, he never really had booking help until he had the feud with Michaels, and once he had the feud with Michaels, I think at that point, because he was feuding with Michaels, they started protecting him. But if you look at they always, even when he was on top, it was always clear that the guy with the book that had the booking help and that was the favorite was Randy Orton. Even when they were both heels and Jericho was more over as a heel, they still booked it for Of course, Randy Orton was, I guess, Triple H's opponent, so that's. But it always felt to me that Randy Orton was protected as the top heel even when Jericho was the top heel.
This person says, does Strikeforce not care about making stars? That's the only explanation I could think of as to why Kung Lee and Scott Smith went to an immediate rematch and why Strikeforce is talking.
I do not understand any controversy over Kung Lee fighting Scott Smith. It boggles my mind that when that was over, to me it's like, what is the most logical match to do when that was over? And it's a rematch. Because Kung Lee is the draw. That's what people don't understand. Scott Smith is not a draw, okay? So what, you're going to put Scott Smith against who? Robbie Lawler? You're going to put Scott... They've already fought twice anyway. You're going to put Scott Smith against Tim Kennedy? No one will care. You're going to put him against Trevor Prangley? You're going to put him against... Melvin Manhoff? None of these matches would mean anything. The only match that Scott Smith could do that would mean anything is Kung Lee, okay? And, conversely, Kung Lee, who is a draw, what match could he do right now that people would be interested in? Frank Shamrock, who's now retired, or Scott Smith? Those are the only two. So therefore, you're pretty much the best match for both guys is each other. And the first match was one of the best matches of last year, all leading to the fact that there was no other match to make. And I think some people like, I mean, there's so many rematches in boxing. And I've asked, because I'm not a boxing message board guy, but I've asked, like, do boxing fans complain? And it's like, no, boxing fans love rematches. Somehow in MMA, when you book rematches, there's something wrong and you're a bad booker. Yet, in UFC, if you look at all the rematches, invariably the second match outdraws or draws equally to the first. So why is a rematch a bad idea? So anyway, I don't know. I mean, you may have a different opinion, but when Kung lost to Scott Smith, the first thing I thought of is, like, man, I want to see a rematch. And that's what they delivered, and that's what the people wanted, and they had another good match. So what was wrong with that?
Well, I immediately argue that they should do Fedor and Verdum 2 before anything else, but his argument here is more along the lines of when an underdog beats a big name, he's saying why not let them ride that out as opposed to immediately doing a rematch to try to let the big name get their win back.
Because for the underdog, he's still a smaller star, and being in with a big name gives him the rub from being in with a big name. I mean, if Scott Smith fought Tim Kennedy, Scott Smith goes down even though he won the fight. And even if he beats Tim Kennedy, he still doesn't go up because Tim Kennedy's not a star yet either. So, I mean, who exactly is there? Thoughts Melvin Manhoff and gets, like, taken apart and destroyed or somehow wins? It doesn't matter because Melvin Manhoff's not a star in this country. Who else do they have at 185? I guess he could fight. He's already fought Nick Diaz. We already know what happens there. And that wasn't as good a fight as the Kung fight. So, I mean, you look at... Besides, the thing is you know, I mean, Scott Smith, how much, you know, realistically, because Scott Smith beat Kung Lee, he's still limited because he's Scott Smith. How big a star can Scott Smith be? He's as big a star as he could possibly be because he had some great come-from-behind finishes, and even then, he's not that big of a star. Beating, he can't beat a top guy anyway. You know, he really, you know, if he fought Kung 10 times, he's losing 8 or 9 of them. And so for him, the best thing was a rematch. For Kung Lee, the best thing was a rematch because you rehabilitate him. For the fans, the best thing was a rematch because you want Kung Lee on a San Jose show in a match that means something, and that was clearly the match that would mean more than any other. So I don't know. I just thought that, like, I thought booking that match was like a complete no-brainer. And then, like, afterwards, I see people complaining, and it's like, again, if you're going to complain, come up with, like, a better scenario that's going to sell more tickets in San Jose or mean more on Showtime. And, you know, I don't think there is one for either guy.
This person wants to know, do you think poses a greater threat to cause an upset, Koscheck against GSP or Sonnen against Silva? I would say Koscheck and GSP.
I would agree. I think that... you know, there's Sonnen will have to take Silva down, and he's a real good wrestler. You know, he took Marquardt down, and Marquardt's a better wrestler than Silva. But, you know, he's got to do it for 5 rounds instead of 3, and it'll be tough. Koscheck, you know, the thing with Koscheck and St. Pierre is that if they do stand and trade, you know, I mean, St. Pierre is certainly the favorite in that situation, but you know, Koscheck can hit him. Koscheck has knockout power, you know, with his hands and his feet. If they go into a wrestling match, you know, just because George out-wrestles him the first time, you know, Josh Koscheck's a great, great wrestler. You know, it could be his day. So, yeah, I would, of the two, I would say, you know, Koscheck being St. Pierre's better shot of an upset win.
A couple more. This person wants to know if Strikeforce has expressed any interest in Keith Jardine.
I haven't heard, but I would think that they probably would. It makes sense. He's a popular guy. You know, so I would, but no, I have not heard.
don't know if anyone's noticed, these are all MMA questions here. Before the Anderson-Maya fight, they seem to be going towards Anderson versus GSP. After the fight, this plan was scrapped, and GSP is now fighting Koscheck. Since GSP and Koscheck are coaching on The Ultimate Fighter before their fight, does this mean the original plan could have been to have Anderson and GSP as coaches?
You know, there's always talk of it because it's a match that will do huge business, but it's a match that, for a lot of reasons, I mean, Dana was very negative on it. Joe Silva is, like, beyond negative on it. But I sensed, because there was so much, you know, they kept, you know, keep asking, and when people keep clamoring for a match, and some people were, and even if they're the minority, when you sit here and go, like, if you put those two against each other, will it draw? It's like, yeah, you know what? It'll draw a lot. So that any promoter's going to think about that. I mean, when I've asked about the match, you know, there's times when Dana seems like he's almost thinking in that direction. And George's thing has always been, you know, like, George's thing has always been, I have to get up to a certain weight, and when I get up to that weight, I'll fight him, you know, which is, I think it's like 200. He's at like 195, I think, or, you know, 193, 194, 195 about now. So he isn't that far from it. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are against that match happening as well. I don't think that it was not in the cards, put it that way. But it was something that's always been in discussion. And no matter what, it wasn't going to happen this year because George needed to gain the weight the right way, you know. And but I mean, for 2011, was it possible? Yeah. And is it possible? Yeah. Yeah. You know, more time there, you know, if they keep winning, I could see them just going like, look, you know, the public wants the match. It's, you know, at that point, I don't know. To me, you know, now that Machida is not the champion anymore at light heavyweight, to me, I think that it's a lot more fair to push the idea of Anderson Silva against Shogun. Because for one thing, you know, Anderson Silva is much closer to Shogun's size than GSP is to Anderson's size. So if you want to do that, you know, champion versus champion match, to me that's a more fair match. And it's also, I mean, Anderson Silva could very well beat Shogun. I guess, you know, George could beat Anderson Silva. It's not unheard of. I mean, again, he could take him down for five rounds and ride him out. And he is probably good enough to where that's a very possible circumstance, but it's not really a great fight. People would be disappointed by it, but it's the only way George can win. But if Shogun and Anderson fight, stylistically, I actually think that would be a great fight because Shogun is good enough that Anderson can't, like, fuck around and ruin the fight like he's been doing in several of his recent fights. So, actually, I kind of like the idea of building to that fight. You know, if it was me, I would have Anderson. Let's see, who would he fight as a, you know, because he's had to fight one good light heavyweight, like a. I don't know.
Well, he already killed Forrest. That's one.
Yeah, maybe like Quentin Jackson. But Anderson Silva against Quentin Jackson, which would be a big time. That fight would do itself big time business. And you know, if Quentin Jackson won, then you rehab Quentin, and there's nothing wrong with that. If Anderson wins, then you go with Anderson against Anderson against Shogun. That's going to be a big money fight too, and probably a great fight. So that's. If it's up to me, that's kind of the direction I'd be leaning, as opposed to Anderson and St. Pierre. I could see doing that too. But
what do you mean by huge when you say Anderson and Shogun?
What?
What do you mean by huge?
Oh, I think that it would be, you know, I don't know, 900,000.
Anderson and Shogun?
I think so.
Not sold on that.
If it's for the championship.
I think Anderson and Quentin's a pretty big fight.
Got great personalities. You know, the two are good personalities. But Shogun, if Anderson beats Quentin, you know, Anderson can draw now, you know, against the right opponent. Anderson, I don't know that he'll draw with Sonnen, but, you know, he may, because Sonnen may talk people into this one. But, you know, I think Anderson and Shogun would draw very well. Not as good as Anderson and St. Pierre, I will grant that. But I think that the two, but I mean, I think that Anderson and Quentin Jackson would draw not all that much different than Anderson and St. Pierre, maybe slightly less. But they're both, you know, you'd get two big ones, I think, in a row.
Well, that's going to do it for today, everybody. We're going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show. And then as the weekend rolls on, Dave and I are both going to be in Las Vegas for the UFC 116 show. So we'll have a lot of different shows from probably post-press conferences, weigh-ins, that sort of thing. And, of course, after the show Saturday night as well. New issue of Figure Four is going up tonight. New issue of The Observer up tomorrow night. And new back issue of The Observer is going to be up as well. So a lot of stuff coming up. Check it out. And we'll talk to you again after a while.